Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Acts of the Apostles, a Bible study with Pastor Arno Bessel.
Hello and thank you for your company. In this study we will explore the last verse of Acts chapter 22 and then progress into chapter 23. If that is possible, I would like to encourage you to open your Bible and follow the readings. The Apostle Paul found himself in Jerusalem facing false accusations and fierce enemies. He had been imprisoned and was about to be flogged when he revealed his Roman citizenship. The Roman commander was alarmed when he heard that, because Roman citizens enjoyed certain rights which must be respected. Paul was released till the next day, when he would be brought before the Supreme Council. The following report is given in Acts chapter 22, verse 30, to chapter 23, verse 5. But on the next day, desiring to know the real reason why he was being accused by the Jews, the tribune unbound him and commanded the chief priest and all the council to meet, and he brought Paul down and set him before them. And looking intently at the council, Paul said, "Brothers, I have lived my life before God in all good conscience up to this day." And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Are you sitting to judge me according to the law, and yet contrary to the law, you order me to be struck?" Those who stood by said, "Would you revile God's high priest?" And Paul said, "I did not know, brothers, that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people.'" Paul was no longer bound, but was free. However, matters had not been settled yet. The commander wanted to find out exactly why Paul was being accused by the Jews. For this reason, he ordered the chief priest and all the council to meet. The highest religious authorities, including Sadducee priests and Pharisee members of the council, came together. Those men constituted the ruling body of the Jews. The Jewish council was respected by the Roman governor, whose approval had to be obtained before sentencing to capital punishment. There was Paul before the Supreme Council with no one to defend him. He addressed the council as brothers, fellow Jews, people of the same origin and background, and said that he had fulfilled his duty to God in all good conscience to that day. In other words, Paul said that he had done nothing wrong. His conscience was free from guilt regarding the charges against him. The presiding high priest, Ananias, did not like Paul's statements and ordered people standing close to Paul to strike him on the mouth. Ananias was noted for cruelty and violence. When the revolt against Rome broke out, he was assassinated by his own people. In the present case, Paul reacted to the order given by Ananias. He was dismayed at being hit unjustly. Paul cursed the high priest, calling him whitewashed wall. The exterior of the priest was attractive, but inside he was filled with unclean contents, such as tombs holding dead bodies. The expression "whitewashed wall" is a metaphor for hypocrite. Paul's words were understood as an insult of Ananias. Then Paul said, "I did not know, brothers, that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people.'" According to Exodus chapter 22, verse 28, a ruler should not be cursed. Paul's statement addressed to the high priest is understood in different ways. 1. Paul had poor eyesight and failed to see that the one who presided was the high priest. 2. Paul failed to discern that the one who presided was the high priest because on some occasions others had sat in his place. 3. Paul was using pure irony. A true high priest would not give such an order. 4. Paul refused to acknowledge that Ananias was the high priest under these circumstances. Anyhow, we cannot look into Paul's mind to determine what he thought. Paul continued to make his defense. In Acts chapter 23, verses 6 to 11, we read the following. Now when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, "Brothers, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. It is with respect to the hope of the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial." And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, nor angel, nor spirit, but the Pharisees acknowledge them all. Then a great clamor arose, and some of the scribes of the Pharisees' party stood up and contended sharply, "We find nothing wrong in this man. What if a spirit or an angel spoke to him?" And when the dissension became violent, the tribune, afraid that Paul would be torn to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him away from among them by force and bring him into the barracks. The following night the Lord stood by him and said, "Take courage, for as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify also in Rome." Paul kept on to address the Supreme Council. He knew that he stood before Sadducees and Pharisees. These two leading religious groups had serious differences between them, but sometimes when there was a common interest, they joined forces. Initially, both aimed to get rid of Paul, but things did not work out for them as expected. Paul identified himself with the Pharisees, stating that he was a Pharisee trained under Gamaliel. He referred to his former way of life and his Pharisaic ancestry. Then he gave the reason why he stood on trial. "It is with respect to the hope of the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial," Paul said. That was the essential element in Paul's message: Jesus' resurrection and the believer's resurrection. But now it also became an element and a strategy of Paul, a divide-and-conquer strategy. Why? Because the Sadducees did not believe in resurrection, neither did they believe in angels or spirits. The Pharisees, on the other hand, did. That was a sensitive point that divided and opposed Sadducees and Pharisees. Indeed, that statement of Paul threw both groups against each other. There was a great uproar, and suddenly some of the Pharisees backed Paul, saying, "We find nothing wrong with this man." They had no problem believing Paul might have had a supernatural experience of a spirit or an angel speaking to him. Now Sadducees and Pharisees fought each other. The situation became dangerous and nearly out of control. The commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces by them, and so he ordered Paul to be taken into the barracks. While in the barracks, during the night, the Lord appeared to Paul to bring him comfort and assurance. "Take courage, for as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify also in Rome." In times of crisis and need for strength, Paul was given help. Paul had given plenty testimony in Jerusalem. He wished to go to Rome, and now the Lord assures him that he would. Let us find out what happened the next day. Acts chapter 23 verses 12 to 15 report. When it was day, the Jews made a plot and bound themselves by an oath neither to eat or drink till they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who made this conspiracy. They went to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have strictly bound ourselves by an oath to taste no food till we have killed Paul. Now therefore you, along with the council, give notice to the tribune to bring him down to you, as though you were going to determine his case more exactly, and we are ready to kill him before he comes near." Behind the scenes, terrible plans were underway. More than 40 men bound themselves with an oath not to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. Probably they were from the Zealots or the terrorists later responsible for revolt against Rome. An oath was taken seriously in those days by the Jews, but it was part of a plot, and they trusted that chief priests and elders were corrupt enough to go along with their plot. The plan was this: the chief priest, elders, and the supreme council would ask the commander to call a meeting and bring Paul before them. While Paul would be on his way to the court, the conspirators would kill him. Did they? Acts chapter 23 verses 16 to 22 give the answer. Now the son of Paul's sister heard of their ambush, so he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Paul called one of the centurions and said, "Take this young man to the tribune, for he has something to tell him." So he took him and brought him to the tribune and said, "Paul, the prisoner, called me and asked me to bring this young man to you, as he has something to say to you." The tribune took him by the hand and, going aside, asked him privately, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And he said, "The Jews have agreed to ask you to bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire somewhat more closely about him. But do not be persuaded by them, for more than 40 of their men are lying in ambush for him, who have bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for your consent." So the tribune dismissed the young man, charging him, "Tell no one that you have informed me of these things." God was in charge of things as he always is. He provided means to protect Paul's life. The plot was, of course, held secret, but somehow the son of Paul's sister heard of it. Paul's nephew is mentioned only here in Scripture. It is not known whether he was a Christian. This lad went to the barracks to tell Paul what he knew. Since Paul was not convicted of a crime, he was allowed to have visitors. When Paul knew of what was being planned, he asked one of the centurions to take the young man to the commander to tell him something. Paul's nephew revealed to the commander the plot plans, giving all the details. The commander sympathized with Paul's nephew, believed him, and cautioned him, "Tell no one that you have informed me of these things." In the same way, the plot plans were kept secret so also should be kept secret the revelation of the plan to the commander. In this way he could take action. The commander wanted to do what he could to protect Paul, a Roman citizen. Paul's nephew stands as an example how family members may support one another in times of trouble and call upon legitimate authority in support of God's people. Good government and family are blessings of God's providence that enable the gospel to spread among us.
Arno Bessel is pastor of St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Plymouth, Devon. St. Peter's offers a friendly atmosphere, and newcomers are always welcome.
In the sequence of the events, we read in Acts chapter 23, verses 23 and 24. Then the tribune called two of the centurions and said, "Get ready 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour of the night. Also provide mounts for Paul to ride and bring him safely to Felix, the governor." The commander did not waste time, but took immediate action. As soon as he knew what was going on, he got ready armed forces to accompany Paul on his transfer to the governor. The great numbers amaze us. Heavily armed infantry, cavalry, and lightly armed soldiers. The commander assigned 470 men to protect Paul. During that very night, he wanted to send Paul to Caesarea, 55 miles from Jerusalem. Caesarea was the administrative center for the governor of the province of Judea. Paul should be taken to Felix, who served as Roman governor of Judea from AD 52 to 60. He was known as being cruel. The commander Claudius Lysias wrote a letter to be delivered to the governor along with Paul. What did he say in the letter? Acts chapter 23, verses 25 to 30 reveal the content. And he wrote a letter to this effect: "Claudius Lysias, to His Excellency the Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them when I came upon them with the soldiers and rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman citizen. And desiring to know the charge for which they were accusing him, I brought him down to their council. I found that he was being accused about questions of their law, but charged with nothing deserving death or imprisonment. And when it was disclosed to me that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, ordering his accusers also to state before you what they have against him." The commander gave a brief history of the events concerning Paul and what he had done to rescue the apostles before he was a Roman citizen. The commander presented the events to cover up the fact that he ordered Paul to be flogged before learning he was a Roman citizen. The commander also informed that the questions involving Paul had to do with the Jewish law, but he could not find any fault in Paul that deserved death or imprisonment. Now the commander was handing over the case to the governor because of a plot against Paul to kill him. He also mentioned in his letter that he ordered Paul's accusers to present their case against Paul before the governor. In Acts chapter 23, verses 31 to 35, we are informed of the following. So the soldiers, according to their instructions, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. And on the next day, they returned to the barracks, letting the horsemen go on with him. When they had come to Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor, they presented Paul also before him. On reading the letter, he asked what province he was from. And when he learned that he was from Cilicia, he said, "I will give you a hearing when your accusers arrive." And he commanded him to be guarded in Herod's praetorium. During the first night of travel, the detachment of troops with Paul reached Antipatris, about 30 miles south of Caesarea. They had traveled about half the distance to the destination. The next day, they judged that enough distance was between Paul and the conspirators, and they were also in territory inhabited primarily by Gentiles. Therefore, only the cavalry continued the journey with Paul, while the other troops went back to Jerusalem. Arriving in Caesarea, the letter and Paul were delivered to the governor. The governor wanted to know what province Paul was from. He wanted to determine who had jurisdiction in Paul's case. The governor would hear Paul's case once his accusers arrived. Meanwhile, Paul was kept under guard in Herod's palace. Herod the Great had built for himself a palace at Caesarea. It became the home of the governor of the province. The gospel, the Christian faith, and Christianity as such have always been rejected and fought by the unbelieving world. The life of the Apostle Paul was very much wanted because he spread the gospel of Jesus Christ everywhere he went. However, God did not forsake the Apostle. We can be certain that the same Lord guards his church today. Jesus Christ is with you to keep you in the faith and to empower you to testify to the salvation. Take heart. Continue to follow Jesus under God's blessing. In the next study, we shall see what happened next to Paul. Join us again.
The study has been prepared and presented by Pastor Arno Bessel. He serves St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Plymouth, Devon. The congregation at St. Peter's is expecting to meet you and to share the good news of Christ with you. Divine services are held on Sunday at 11 a.m. and Bible studies on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. For more details, visit our website, stpeterslutherans.co.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook, St. Peter's Lutheran Church, Plymouth, England. For questions or comments about any issues raised in this program, write an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. Check our program online and stay tuned.